This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Nick Acosta, that's who we play at the start of every single show. I'm still completely baffled how she did not turn into a complete superstar. But it's not the first or last thing I am or will be wrong about. Chad Hartman, Dan Cook, Laura Oakes with the news. You know what I found out about our guy Carter? So I told you, Dan, about an hour and a half ago. Mike Ostrom on today. First time we've had to do this with Mike because the schedule's so busy. We had to record our conversation with Mike. We'll play it again at 1:05, our normal time.
2:05.
So... oh, we're moving it to 205?
205 because Belsky's going to be at 105.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. We've been very fluid with our guests today. We have a lot. Let's go through the guest lineup, shouldn't
we? Let's do.
Why don't you, Dan, why don't you, let me throw it to you, the producer of the show. Take us through our guest lineup.
Should I do it in the radio voice, Chad?
Hello, everybody. Call in. By the way, a chance to win some Wolves tickets later today when you hear Chris Tubbs howl. That's legit. At some point,
yes,
before this show is done, chance to win a pair of tickets for a Wolves game. We're not telling you when. Could be in 2 minutes.
Could be.
Could be at 2:58. At some point, you'll hear the howl, and you'll call in and be the 830th caller. And you will win the tickets.
Or the 8th caller. Stop it. Don't make me do more work. What are you doing?
Quitter.
Please. Okay, so yeah, we are shuffling things around a little bit from our usual Wednesday lineup. 12:35 is going to be Playing Politics. That's going to be John Rash and DJ Tice from the Star Tribune editorial board joining you. Shame that there isn't really anything to talk about in the political world. I don't know what you guys are going to do in that segment.
Nothing.
Consumer prices up at a record level. And we don't think we've seen a rise this high since 1982 were the stories that I was reading. So one of our financial gurus, Brian Belsky, is going to join the show at 1:05.
By the way, a guy who is... downplayed inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 7%. As you said, up the most it's been in, what, 39 years?
Yeah.
We'll see if he's still downplaying.
We will see. We will see. And then newly minted Hall of Famer Jim Cott is going to join us at 1:35. The Twins announcing today they're going to retire Kitty's number 36 this summer. So presuming that there is a season in which to retire it during.
Yeah.
But we'll talk to the Hall of Famer, the legend, Jim Cott at 1:35.
There
will be at some point.
Yeah.
I'm not optimistic about spring training. I'll just leave it at that. Dr. Michael Osterholm, like we said, we taped that conversation earlier today. That'll play back at 2:05. And then 2:35, our friend Michelle Tafoya will join us. Story coming out, obviously, yesterday being confirmed that she's moving on from Sunday Night Football. What's the next phase of her career? We will talk to her at 2:35.
I will say this. I've received texts, tweets, and phone calls well into double figures on limo. That's my nickname for limo, for Tafoya.
Limo's your next nickname for limo? That's good.
Yeah, exactly. That was pretty good. Asking, requiring, demanding that I ask her if she's running for governor. It will be a part of the conversation.
You have to ask, right?
Oh, for sure. The nickname goes back to when Barrero and I were together, and Michelle had her first gig with CBS, and we started kidding her with her success and leaving us, calling her limo. So it is stuck. Michelle will join us. I'm guessing from home, but I don't know. They've got a game this week. I think they have the Chiefs and Steelers. That will be the end of the Ben Roethlisberger era in the National Football League. But I mentioned Adam Robert Carter.
You did.
And as I was finishing, as we finished the Mike Osterholm conversation, and you'll enjoy it as always, 205, as Dan just said, I saw that Adam was on the Twitter machine. And I thought, well, this is great. It was close to 11. Adam is done. He's done with his colonoscopy. I want to check in and see how he's doing. No, he has his colonoscopy scheduled at 2:45 today. He hasn't ate since Monday.
Oh.
What awful scheduling by Carter.
Well, but we talked about yesterday, you know, it's an almost half a miracle he could get a procedure like this scheduled given hospitals and clinics being overwhelmed. So maybe, you know, 2:45 is take it or leave it.
I would have pushed it back weeks. Get this baby in the morning to go a day and a half without food. He told us he just lost 18 pounds.
Yeah.
Bravo to him. That's fantastic. Probably he's dropped another 5-6 pounds. Well, at least considering the process. But I don't think he's our scheduler on the show if this is the time he came up with for the colonoscopy. So 2:45 does give us the chance that maybe after our conversation with Tafoya, we go live to the medical facility.
StreamYard it
and see what's going on.
Yeah.
Let's just say we did receive a number of texts on the colonoscopy topic yesterday. So we wish him only the best. Expect him back tomorrow when he will have consumed 7 pizzas, a few steaks just to get back eating once again. I don't think, if I remember right, you can't jump in real fast.
I think you got to ease into it.
You do, but when it's been a time he's kind of out of the grogginess, it's 6-7 o'clock. We're approaching now 2 full days without food for young Adam. So I think, like anybody, he's going to jump back into the food. Let's do this. Let's pause. I want to talk about the movie theater business. News coming out of DeRussia Grove, that Maple Grove, which seemingly has every chain known to mankind, this news coming yesterday, that they will be without a movie theater, a giant Cineplex. They lost one earlier, about a decade ago. And now the biggie, the AMC Theaters, the 16-plex, is shutting down. Is this industry done? Are you one who still goes to the movie theater? Do you still love it? Do you still enjoy everything about it, including the big screen, the new seats we have, the better food? Or have you moved on? You've got your plasma, you got your 16G, you got your great TV, you got your TV set up. Maybe you have to wait a week or two. Or maybe now these movies are coming out at the same time, some of them do, that you don't care at all. Is the movie theater industry done? Your thoughts, you can chime in with phone calls and text 651-461-9226. Mitch McConnell just absolutely torched Joe Biden on the Senate floor on voting rights, calling the president unpresidential. When Playing Politics joins us 12:35, that will be topic number one. Right now, we're talking about movie theaters and the movie theater industry, reacting to what's taking place in Maple Grove, AMC, 16 screens, what we see all across the country. And like what has happened all across the country, Uncle, they shut down. They've got a new business going in right away. But COVID has dramatically altered this business, Dan. I mean, there is no arguing that whatsoever. I can give you some numbers here. This year, $4.4 billion. That's up from 2019, up 61%, but still nowhere close to where it was before. Okay? And this is all COVID-related, right? Now, we've had streaming options before. Streaming is only getting better. People are buying TVs because right now, I mean, it seems like in about 2 months, Dan, you're going to get some plasma 52-inch for about $2. Buy a burger, get a TV. But the engine which is driving this is COVID. I will say for me, I have been a movie theater fan pretty much my entire life, driven by my mother. My mother brought us to movies all the time as kids. My mother was a very, very social person. I get that 99% of the people who listen to the station, if they think of my family, they think of my father. I did not live full-time with my father until I was going into seventh grade. And really, it was with my father maybe about 20% of the time, and almost all the time, games. So my mother and my sister, especially my sister the last 2-3 years, kind of dictated that part of my life. And I continue to do that in high school, in college, in my adult life. Dan, I'm going to say this. I don't wish any industry to go underwater. I don't care about going to movies anymore. Mm. I really don't, and I'm shocked by it. I'm shocked because I love the sweet new theaters now, the better food, how movies, certain movies, look so much better at, as an example, this closed theater in Maple Grove. I am not a stay-at-home person by my desire. I'm staying home more right now because of Omicron and Quentin and Mike and Kathleen's health. But I am not been a basement person at any point. Smart, N95 mask, making good decisions. Maybe I'll change, Dan, but I have come to accept whether the Mac that's right in front of me, the TVs, having a couple TVs at the house, which are nice, and I'm okay with it. And if you had told me in 2018, I would say, you're kidding me. I'm not saying I won't move back. Right now, Dan, I am fine with it. Now, I know you go to more movies themselves, the theater, and you are even more cautious than me about COVID.
Yep. Yeah, and when I do go, I mean, I mask up for the period of time, you know, leading up to the film. I'll take the mask off to, you know, munch on a little popcorn and have a soda or whatever I'm going to drink. And then as soon as I'm done, mask goes back on, which isn't, you know, a perfect solution by any stretch of the imagination, but it's, you know, given the context and the set of circumstances, it's the best I can do. I also try to go to sparsely populated showings of films. That allows you to kind of pick and choose seats and give yourself a little bit of space that way as well. So, you know, I'm conscious of it, but I do still very much enjoy the movie theater experience. I think the industry as we had known it prior to the pandemic is done. I don't think that's ever coming back in that regard. Movie theaters are going to have to, and they're already, you know, wrestling with this somewhat to begin with, right? We talked about this in the past, that you're going to have to make it a unique experience, something that can't just simply be recreated in people's homes, because if you can't, if it's just the same experience, well, why is somebody going to go out, right? I mean, we saw during the pandemic, HBO Max and other Disney Plus and other services would charge a surplus of like $30, which is for like, if you're a family of four, $30 is dirt cheap if you're talking about a first run movie.
Yeah. So as a comparison to go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Without question. So, you know, you're going to have to make it a destination experience. You're going to have to make it unique. And, you know, this AMC theater in Maple Grove, I've been there a bunch of times. There are plenty of other theaters in the metro area that are much better experiences than that one was. I'm not shocked that that particular
theater. Sounds like you're happy it's gone.
I'm not
dancing on Jason DeRush's hometown.
Dancing on the grave.
Why don't you go out there? Why don't you go out there tonight and look for people who worked at that theater and say, I'm glad you're unemployed.
That's exactly what I meant. No, but I mean, you know, like the Plymouth 15 Theater over by you, right? That's got the recliners.
Me?
And,
yeah,
and
my town.
You know, that's a great theater. There's a theater over in Oakdale that has like waiter service that'll come, you know, before the show.
And so what a fancy pants you've become.
Okay, you know, but I'm saying, there's ways to make this a bigger, more destination experience. The Showplace Icon Theater in St. Louis Park is where I go most often.
Okay, let me jump in because I want to get to a bunch of texts here, too. I agree with you. Yes. I thought AMC, Maple Grove, meh.
Yeah.
Totally with you. The revitalized one by me, much better. But even those places are struggling, Dan.
No question.
Even those places are struggling. Let's keep going. Let's me and you react because a ton of texts are coming in.
Okay.
Always appreciate it. 651-461-9226 and phone calls are encouraged also. The movie theater experience is not dead. Love to go to Marcus Southbridge and dinner afterwards. Movie date night with my wife is the best. Haven't been to a movie in 20 years. Haven't had a TV in more than 10 years. Unfortunately, I don't listen to CCO too much and very kind to our show. Thank you. That's very, very nice of you. Biggest problem is it's $100 for my family, five to go. Let's jump on that, Dan. It has become more expensive. Their comeback would be what you just said.
Yeah.
That the experience is better. That the screens are better. The sound is better. The chairs are better. The food options are better. The alcohol opportunities are better. That's irrefutable. It's up to you to make a budget decision, because if you still want to pay less, we have the smaller theaters, and if your schedule allows it, and that's the key, you can go early in the day and you don't spend anywhere near that figure.
Our guy Jason Dresha just texted me, said it's a mediocre theater. We're right. His kids prefer Plymouth. Talk about me dancing on the grave of people.
That's why he hasn't been the grand marshal of the Maple Grove parade. Comments like that. But he's right. It is just, it's average.
Yeah.
I have not set foot in movie theater since the early 2000s. Last movie was one of the Lord of the Rings trilogies. Haven't been in the theater in over 2 years. I miss it greatly. Won't be going until the virus is under control. Okay, so let's talk about that. Mike Osterholm's with us at 205. I talked to him about endemic and living with COVID. I still believe this summer, or I still hope, and I know a speck as much as Mike Ostrom does, I still think this summer is going to be comparable to last summer. Do we think the movie theaters are going to dramatically bounce back this summer when a lot of blockbusters are available? A lot of movies have been held back because they're trying to make massive money. The Spider-Man boffo success of late, that's the aberration. That's not typical.
It's the aberration, but what it demonstrates is that people are still willing to go to a movie theater for a big-time, spectacular movie. So will it bounce back suddenly? Probably not. But will you have Spider-Man-like success stories as it builds its way back towards whatever the new normal is going to be? I believe so, yes.
More text. While I'm not a movie guy, I'm amazed the theater business has lasted this long, and now with labor shortages, it's got to be dead man walking. We have so many changes on the streaming experience now, Dan, where they're in tandem now. Or it's 10 days. Or it's 2 weeks. And as much as I've looked forward to certain movies coming out, it never gets to me where I need to see it in the first 2 weeks. Never for me. You, I think, are a little different. You're not Kyle. You're not Cousin Kyle.
No.
But you're way closer to Kyle than you are to me, I think.
True. Yeah, no, I don't go to, like, midnight showings. I don't, you know, I know you guys love to tell me I dress up like Gandalf and stuff. I don't do any of the cosplay or anything like that. I will go opening weekend, usually to a matinee, say on, like, a Saturday or a Sunday, to movies that I really want to see. I still think seeing a film in a theater experience, especially with some of the nicer places where it's more comfortable, better food options, is unique. It's different than anything you can recreate at home. And that still appeals to me.
Yeah, for me, it's probably just going back and reminding myself of how great it is. But I also, think it's pretty good when I can walk right now about 15 feet, click through endless options, and I've got it.
Yeah.
Plus, there's so much great TV.
Mm-hmm.
Great. It's peak TV and only gets better. You can sit there and molt into your furniture just seeking out great television. A lot of text coming in. Let's make sure we try to work our way back to this, even though we have a lot of great guests on the movie theater experience. Playing Politics, Star Tribune editorial board with John Rash and DJ Tice is up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's jump in right away, Playing Politics with the Star Tribune editorial board. John Rash is here each week, joined by DJ Tice. Doug is here quite frequently. Gentlemen, it is a pleasure. Yesterday, the President of the United States, maybe his most vigorous defense of voting rights, including suggesting on voting rights specifically, not in total, but he would be willing to accept a pretty dramatic and historical change on the filibuster. Mitch McConnell, for about 20 minutes starting around noon, just excoriated the President of the United States, called him unpresidential, said he didn't recognize the man, said it's false hysteria, and it falls to the Senate to stop what the President and the Democrats are proposing on a federal voting rights bill, which John and Doug, we both know, is to counter what has passed in many states in light of President Trump's false and baseless claims that the election was stolen from him. John, what is your reaction to how the last 24 hours have played out? And then, Doug, you chime in right after.
Well, Senator McConnell saying that about President Biden is quite striking, especially because even though they're on opposite sides of the aisle, by all accounts, they and so many other senators who worked with then-Senator Biden, including especially Lindsey Graham, who testified about his character at one point, had a really good, comfortable relationship with him. So to go to the Senate floor and excoriate him like this is quite striking, doesn't bode well for the next year of necessary legislative action, and just shows how deep the divide is between leaders and often followers of the two parties on such a fundamental issue of elections, which after all are democracy's DNA. So people feel very passionately in either direction about this. If many of these bills that have been passed by generally Republican state legislatures and signed by generally Republican governors are a reflection of President Trump's claims, those have been proven to be a lie. Regardless of anyone's politics, the claims that he has have not borne out to be the truth. And that was confirmed by no less than another Senate colleague, Mike Rounds, a Republican of South Dakota, quite conservative, who said flat out on Sunday, President Trump did not win the election and we should not continue with this. If anything, it's going to discourage our own voters. So I think that this is not certainly the last we're going to hear about this.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different reaction. I am deeply disturbed by the playing with fire that I think is going on all sides, at least among the leadership, with, you know, this apocalyptic, hysterical, hateful rhetoric. This talk of civil war and the death of democracy. And, you know, I think that we are running some great risks in the country, not only of talking ourselves into some kind of major conflagration, but there are fragile minds among us listening to this. And I fear that terrible things are going to happen if this continues. I just think we all need to calm down. You know, this debate, frankly, seems to me a classic case of the ferocity of the debate being completely out of balance with the seriousness of the issues. The fact is, Reese, very clear, we have very little fraud in our elections, and we have very little voter suppression. You know, you talked about this being a response Republicans have done state by state, which is true, but that in turn is a response to a whole raft of liberalizations of mail-in voting and early voting and same-day registration, all of which came into play last year in many places for the first time. Even in Minnesota, we never had excuse-free absentee voting until 2014. That's 7 years ago. Did we not have democracy before that? You can't have democracy without same-day registration and early voting for a month and drive-through voting and all the rest of it. You know, we're getting to the point where you can't disagree about anything without being a racist and a Nazi and with people starting to talk about civil war. And we just got to stop it.
I agree.
I agree, yeah. And I include the media in that.
Yeah, I agree 10,000% with what you said. So, let's talk about some of the actual policy points. Because I look at some states, Doug, and I'll go you first, and then, John, you jump in. I look at what some of the states have done, and I think, come on, that looks like suppression. I look at what other states have done, and I say I could find liberal states where it's about the same, and there's such a generalization about it. At the same time, I hear from Republicans on voting by mail or voting early and acting like those votes don't matter and we haven't done this before. So sadly, it's typical of everything now, Doug, of we can't have anything where there's compromise. We can't find some level of agreement. So when you look at what's happening in the states, in your view, do you think the federal government should play any part in reacting to this? Obviously, we've had voting rights at key points in our country's history in reaction to changes that were pushed more by Democrats before this and now clearly pushed more by Republicans. In your ideal world, DJ, what should the Senate, House, and President pass, if anything, in reaction to the last 5-6 years?
Well, you know, it's a complex array of issues. I don't have any objection to the federal policy intervening in certain areas where federal elections are concerned and requiring certain things, prohibiting other things. And, you know, we could have a debate case by case or issue by issue and work those things out. But, you know, you talk about in my ideal world. Well, the way democracy actually works is nobody gets their ideal world. What we do is sit down and figure out what we can agree on, we can compromise on, and what we just have to leave alone. You know, it wasn't very long ago, and where elections in particular were concerned, there was a doctrine that major changes had to be bipartisan. I can remember Mark Dayton vetoing a bill that I don't remember what the detail was, but it changed something about elections in some significant way, and it was a Democratic bill. But he vetoed it because it didn't have enough Republican support. And the point is, this is the way you undermine confidence in elections. by one party or the other ramming through changes in how we run elections. We've got to go back to that principle at both state and federal levels, that if we're going to make changes, they need to be bipartisan and they should not be done in the courts. Now, we had a pandemic, and that's some of what happened in 2020. But we had courts transforming, and some of that happened in Minnesota, transforming the rules of elections without the legislature even getting involved. And, of course, John, that creates concerns. Go ahead, John.
Well, I certainly think that my colleague DJ brings up several salient points, including the fact that it isn't inappropriate that the federal government, the legislature in Congress, House and Senate would get involved because many of the elections have a federal component to it. And DJ also appropriately brings up the point that many of these changes certainly have been within relatively recent times greatly accelerated during the pandemic for obviously necessary health reasons. I do think that one of the issues, we're kind of centering this conversation a bit on actual voting. One of the dynamics that's happened is our bills in some states, some that have advanced very deeply in the legislatures and with the governors of the, that might change how the electors themselves could, in effect, you know, be changed if a state doesn't agree, in effect, with what happened. You know, here you're getting into individuals and more arcane laws, but there's been a real big push. And quite compellingly, Ezra Klein, who is a liberal columnist for the New York Times, with a piece a couple days ago, in effect saying Steve Bannon is onto something, and Steve Bannon has been pushing for Republicans to get much more deeply involved at the very lower local and state levels where the machinations of this whole process happened. Democrats haven't gotten nearly as aggressive in chasing after those seats, but that's where some of the disputes may happen in the 2024 election, as an example.
Let me switch here to President Trump, who seemingly always is in the news, even though he's not the president. And I could pick out like three topics where he's been in the news in the last 24 hours. But let me pick this one. You know, over the last month or so, going back to one of his last appearances with Bill O'Reilly, when they were traveling the country, that's when he said, I'm boosted. And I encourage everyone to get boosted. In that case, there was some booing, not as much as other places where he touted the vaccines. And then he would backpedal very quickly and say, hey, it's still your call. And he's done a couple of interviews. In the last 24 hours, he did an interview where he called politicians, John, gutless if they will not announce if they're boosted or not. And it is clear for any of us who pay attention to politics, he is pointing his finger at one man, the governor of Florida, Governor DeSantis, who, if he would run against Donald Trump, probably at this point, most of his view would be his strongest competitor. What does that say about Donald Trump and DeSantis over the next year or so?
That he's nervous about him and he realizes he would be his strongest competitor. And Governor DeSantis brings some of the same opinions, some of the same policies, and some of the same attitude, but without the endless controversy that President Trump has been involved in throughout his entire adult public life. And so he is probably rightfully concerned, if he's going to run again, that some conservatives may rally around Governor DeSantis as a more saleable, a more electable Republican leader and candidate for president. I don't disagree with him that, you know, he's in effect saying, I answer the questions, others should answer them as well. And, you know, so yes, some of this is political. Some of it has to do, you know, with health policy and with transparency. And so, you know, I think that one of the great losses of this entire pandemic era is if President Trump, whose administration did some terrific work with Operation Warp Speed and in getting the process of getting the vaccines out there, hadn't continued to tell his supporters, to tell everyone who would listen, how important it is to get vaccinated. And he really hasn't done that until very recently.
How about this back and forth, DJ? It could be very interesting to watch.
I'm sorry, you're talking about the DeSantis, Trump?
Yeah, Trump. On COVID and how the Trump base, where there's a fair amount who are not vaccinated, not boosted, how they might react to the guy they've supported so much.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think John covered it very well. I think it's a very good sign for the country as a whole that Trump has things to be nervous about, including, you know, hanging on to his own base, and that there are other people who can appeal to that constituency and perhaps a broader constituency. I don't know if that's DeSantis or not, but it's a little bit like the Youngkin success in Virginia, somebody who, you know, got a lot of Trumpian policy approaches, but a very different style, very different tone, and in success without really hitching himself to the, you know, the Trump train. I think the more that becomes a possibility going forward, the better the prospects that we won't have to deal with another Trump. See, I still wouldn't bet on it, but
DJ, I got to jump in. Your phone is breaking up, and we're up against the clock also. Gentlemen, as always, thank you so much. Playing politics with the Star Tribune editorial board. We may get some clarification from cities, kind of cities you may have heard of, Minneapolis and St. Paul, on further policies related to COVID and maybe vaccines and requirements. So that might come up next hour. Also next hour, our guy Brian Belsky on inflation. That's coming up on CCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.